Hey, listeners. Welcome back to Book Club Appetizer. We are your book-obsessed hosts, Abby
and Emma. We wanted to kick off this episode by thanking you for tuning in each month. I guess iTunes also thinks Book Club Appetizer is pretty cool because they named us one of their top podcasts for book lovers.
Yes! So if you love to read, you've come to the right place. Every month, we're bringing you a snackable podcast that's perfect for kicking off book club meetings or enhancing your solo reading adventures.
Are you looking for a great new read? Is it your turn to pick a book for book club? We're over here choosing titles that foster discussion and debate amongst your most literary friends. And then we bring the author into the studio for an exclusive interview.
And because we are nothing if not food obsessed, we pair each book with an appropriate appetizer and cocktail recipe served up by our friends at Tastebook. The book we read this month centers on two unforgettable characters, each from different cultures. One is Korean-American, the other is Jamaican.
With that in mind, at our book club this month, we chose to serve coconut biscuits, which are like a delicious, crunchy little cookie, and a sunny, Mayer lemon-infused cocktail called The West Side, perfect because this book takes place in Manhattan all over the span of one day.
So I know you're dying of suspense, but before we tell you what we read this month, we feel compelled to warn you that this podcast may contain plot spoilers. So go read the book and then come back.
And this month's book club appetizer pick is Nicola Yoon's The Sun Is Also a Star. Nicola is a young adult author who we got to know after the release of her debut YA novel, Everything, Everything. Now, if you're not yet familiar with Nicola, I'd say her teen protagonists are right up there with those of John Green.
Ooh, Emma, that John Green comparison is pretty apt. This book reminded me in a lot of ways of The Fault in Our Stars, minus the terrible illness. So in The Sun Is Also a Star, at the novel's opening, we meet Natasha, a pragmatic, science-minded high schooler who believes in experiments and proven facts. Her family moved to the U.S. from Jamaica when Natasha was 8 years old, and now they're supposed to be deported tonight.
At the same time, we also meet Daniel, a Korean-American high school boy who is a dutiful son to his immigrant parents, who want him to become a doctor or maybe a lawyer. But Daniel doesn't want to take the path his parents have chosen for him. What he really, really wants is to be a poet, writing about unrequited love, even though he's never felt it.
Oh. And it's by complete accident that our two star-crossed lovers meet in Midtown Manhattan. Daniel is on his way to a college interview for Yale, where his parents want him to go, and Natasha is trying desperately to figure out a way to keep her family from leaving the U.S., and they're supposed to board a plane at 10 p.m. that very night.
When they do meet, neither of them can ignore that there's definitely something between them. Daniel, always the dreamer, believes that fate, or maybe the universe, has brought them together. Natasha, on the other hand, isn't quite so sure.
The day they spend together makes up the lion's share of this whole novel. They talk about science. They talk about the science behind falling in love. They talk about their fears and their dreams and their well-meaning but limiting parents. And they even find time for karaoke. And there are such interesting issues of culture and the scientific method at play here as these young kids fall for each other over the course of just a few hours.
But like we learned from Shakespeare, these young lovers are bound to be torn apart. And their deadline is in a few hours, when Natasha and her family are supposed to uproot their entire lives and move back to a place that hasn't been home for any of them in over a decade. Nicola Yoon does a really incredible job of painting a picture of this young woman who's grown up on U.S. soil, but who's undocumented. That part of the novel just ripped my heart out, basically.
Ugh, same. And just like John Green does so successfully, these characters are so fleshed out. I mean, they really feel wholly real and original, as does their fateful love story. And I think Nicola does an amazing job of balancing the concepts of fate versus science in a way that really makes you think.
When we come back, author Nicola Yoon will sit with Abby in the studio and reveal what parts of this novel are just a little bit autobiographical. This episode of Book Club Appetizer is brought to you by Season of Stories from our friends at Penguin Random House. It's no secret that the inbox can be a pretty hectic, miserable place. The Season of Stories aims to change that by delivering great stories from award-winning authors directly to your inbox. And did we mention it's free? Sign up at theseasonofstories.com today before the season ends. That's theseasonofstories.com.
And now we welcome Nicola Yoon, author of The Sun is Also a Star, into the studio. Welcome to Book Club Appetizer. I'm Abby, here with Nicola Yoon, author of The Sun is Also a Star. Welcome, Nicola.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Excellent. So can you tell us a little bit about, this is your second novel, Everything, Everything was your first novel. Tell us a little bit about what this one is about.
Okay, so The Sun is Also a Star is about a poetic boy named Daniel. And he's trying to convince a very science-minded girl named Natasha to fall in love with him over the course of 12 hours in New York City. And they only have 12 hours because Natasha's family is being deported to Jamaica at the end of the day.
Mm. And what inspired you to write this story?
It was inspired by a couple of things. The first is Carl Sagan, who I got to see lecture when I was in college and who I'm a big, huge fan of, or was a big fan of. He's a great scientist, such a humanist, and he had this insane ability to take something complicated scientific theories and bring them down to the human level. But one of my favorite things he ever said was, in order to create an apple pie, you must first invent the universe. And I wanted to see if I could do something or demonstrate that in a book, right? So we are all formed by our histories, but we are formed by the histories of our friends and the histories of our family. We're formed by the histories of people we don't even know, like strangers that are sitting next to you. So I had this idea that I wanted to try to show two people falling in love in New York City, but I wanted to show their love, how their love is affected by all the things that are surrounding them. So in order to create this big love, you need to know all the histories of their families and these strangers that seem not to connect, but who are in fact connected to them.
Oh, and so all of these different family members are sort of woven into this day-long narrative.
Right.
And in the book, Natasha is Jamaican-American, and just like you are, and Daniel is Korean-American, just like your husband is. So is there any portion of this book that's at all autobiographical about your own romance?
Right. So despite all those things that you just said, this is not an autobiographical book. So I did not fall in love with my husband over the course of 12 hours in New York City under the threat of deportation. But it is inspired by the spirit of our relationship. My husband and I are very philosophical. We talk about the meaning of life and, you know, does God exist and fate and destiny and science versus art and that sort of thing. And in the book, Natasha and Daniel talk about that stuff a lot. Mm-hmm. And so the spirit of a relationship, this, like, you know, sort of intellectual curiosity that we have, Daniel and Natasha share. They approach it from different points of view, but they are really interested in those big questions.
Mm. And in this book, Daniel is a romantic dreamer and a poet, like you said, and Natasha believes in science and proven fact. Do you relate to one character over another, or are you a blend of both of these?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think I used to be probably more like Natasha, so more science-minded. I majored in electrical engineering in college. But then over the years, I have, you know, like now that I'm a writer, I've definitely moved to the sort of Daniel point of view. But honestly, I think it's good to be a mix of both. I think what happens is we tell each other that you're either a science person or an art person, you know, like you're either good at math or you're good at writing or English or something. And I think that's not true. I think most people are reasonably good at both things. But we, like, force ourselves to specialize, and so young, too. Like, in middle school, like, we all tell each other this stuff. we're not really like that. And I think the world is best looked at from both points of view. Like, science and art are both trying to get to the truth, right? But they just take different approaches. And if you blend your mind together and take a holistic view of the world, I think you understand it more.
And how did you move from electrical engineering to being a YA author? That's a great path.
It was so random, as are lots of things. I had to take an elective class my senior year of college, and I ended up taking this writing class. And at the time, I was like suffering through this horrible unrequited love relationship. And I wrote really terrible poetry about unrequited love for a year or for a semester. And I loved writing, and my teacher was really, really gracious. She said, "You have potential." And I always remember her saying, "You have potential." And I got bitten by the writing bug, and then ended up going to graduate school a few years later, where I met my husband, and then writing on and off for years until finally everything happened.
Oh, I love that story. Well, that's a mirror sort of Daniel's perspective of, he's like, "I'm writing these poems, but I don't know what I'm writing about. I haven't experienced this love,"
right,
until,
yes,
all of a sudden one day he's,
Natasha,
he's crushed by it. Yes. So interconnectedness is this great theme in The Sun Is Also a Star. People are connected by their words and their actions and being in the same place at the same time, and their relationships to one another, whether that's parent-child or peer-to-peer. Can you talk a little bit about this theme and why you wove in this idea of this web, almost, of humanity?
Well, I mean, I really think that we are all connected. And I think it's difficult for us to notice because our lives are often so busy, right? I mean, we have bills to pay and kids to get to school and a myriad of things that happen to us every day. But we really are. If we could stop and pay attention to each other, we would notice that we were all connected. I like to tell this sort of little anecdote about going into Starbucks, right? So say you go into Starbucks and you're wearing a tie, a nice tie, and the barista says to you, "You know, nice tie." And you've been having a crappy day before that, but the barista says that and you feel a little good. And then you're going to your job and you hold the door open for someone because you're feeling a little better. And normally you don't hold the door open, but you do today. And the person you hold the door open for, looks up at you and is like, "Oh, that's nice." And, you know, she'd been having a crappy day, but you held the door, and so that's nice. And maybe you make eye contact. And then maybe you get a little bold and you ask her to have coffee at the same Starbucks. And then you go have coffee. And then, you know, 10 years and 3 children later, you're perfectly, perfectly happy. And it all happened because that barista said, "Nice tie." I think stuff like that happens all the time, but we don't have time to notice it. And, you know, especially in our, like, current political environment, it'd be nice if we just stopped, took a time to notice each other. We are way more similar than we are different, and we really are all connected.
Yeah. And just that takes it back to a physics idea, which is an item in motion tends to stay in motion. So good karma and energy into the world tends to manifest.
Yes.
Yeah. And speaking on that sort of political environment, having this deadline for Natasha at the end of the day when her family is supposed to get on a plane and be deported, I think... for many of your readers, it might not be something that they are confronted with, the threat of deportation, every day, though now it is in our cultural conversation. What do you think, you know, that young kids who have grown up in this country, like Natasha has, are worried about in this time, in this uncertain time?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're worried about is America is a place that feels like home, right? I mean, for many of these kids, it is home. There's like going back to another country there's no there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what gets lost in some of these conversations about immigration is like the actual humanity of the people we're talking about, right? They want the same things that, you know, American citizens want. They have the same hopes and dreams. They're silly in the same ways, and you know, they're flawed in the same ways. I mean, they're the same. And some of the most patriotic people I've ever met in my life are immigrants, right? Because they come to America, it's like an act of hope. and they love this country and they work hard and they embody that dream. And I really wanted to point out that we're talking about real people. It's not just a political idea.
Right. These numbers, these faceless numbers. Yeah. Each of these
are actual people with, like, they're the same as everyone else.
Right. With roots. And, and Natasha doesn't want to not go to college. And she's got her classmates and her. She's worked so hard to get where she is. And suddenly it's threatened everything she's worked for.
And America is home. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So what do you love, Nika, about writing about teenagers? I think, you know, you have crafted some of two of my favorite heroines, Maddie and Natasha. These women are strong and self-assured. They're coming of age. They're open to the world. What is so incredibly interesting about writing these age characters?
Yeah, you know, it's such a privilege, right? Because I think teenagers are naturally philosophical, right? Just their state of being, just being 17 or 16 or 18 makes you philosophical because you are trying to figure out your place in the world. Like, you're trying to figure out how you fit, where you're going to be, who you want to be. You're asking all these questions. Sometimes you're trying to come to an answer. Sometimes eventually you'll realize that it's the asking of the questions that matter. But they're sort of naturally philosophical, and I'm like that anyway, right? So as I was saying before, like, I'm sort of geeky, and I talk about all the sort of big questions with my husband and every chance I get with anyone who will listen to me. And so, like, talking about that stuff and teenagers being like that is sort of a natural fit. Mm-hmm. For us, I want to be a part of that conversation with teenagers. So they're still figuring out who they are, and I want to be able to say, hey, look at this point of view over here, and look at this other one, and here's another question you can ask. I want to be a part of that shaping, you know, for the future. When I was younger, I had so much angst, and I really, really wanted the answers to all questions, and I figured if I could figure it out, then I would be happy forever. And now that I'm old, I realize that it's the asking of the question that matters, like, you know, the wanting to know that's more important. And I just want to be a part of that with teenagers. It's a privilege to write for kids.
And what has some of the feedback been from your readers? Do you get to dialogue with them at all they've read?
I get the best emails. I seriously do. Lots of emails just like, people saying, I never thought about this before, or I really liked how, some very long, like, book reports. And I don't always get to respond, but I get, like, really beautiful, lovely, thoughtful emails.
Oh, that's so cool. So what message are you hoping readers take away from The Sun is Also a Star?
You know, that we really are connected. We are not so different, after all, especially if you look at someone's history. Like, it might seem strange what they're doing in this moment, but there's almost always some reason for it that you can understand. And we just have to look. And it's hard because, as I say, we're so busy. But if we had enough time to pay attention, and we should make the time, really, you would see that we're connected. Mm.
So congratulations are in order. You were a National Book Award finalist.
Thank you. Incredible.
When and how did you hear the news? Where were you?
So there's two ways you find out about the National Book Award. So there's the long list. And for that list, there are 10 books. Okay, so for the long list, I was in bed at home in Los Angeles, and my friend Adam texted me, and he's in New York, and he often forgets the time difference. So it was 5 a.m., and I just saw his text, and I was like, Adam, what are you doing? You forgot again. But then I saw his text that I was on the long list, and I thought he was kidding. But then he sent the link. And I was like, oh, my God. And I got up and I went to the living room. My husband was up already and he was writing. And he thought someone had died from the look on my face. But no one had died. So that was how I found out about the long list. And then for the finalist, the short list, I was in an airport Starbucks on my way to Maryland to sign books. And I had known that if you made the short list that someone would call. So I saw this sort of unfamiliar New York number on my phone, and I was like in the Starbucks, and I picked it up, and she said, "This is Lisa Lucas of the National Book Foundation," and that's as far as she got, because I just started crying. In the Starbucks at the airport, and I cried and cried, and no one asked me how I was doing.
All these travelers are going about
their
business.
No one cared. But it was kind of tragic, but I mean, I was thrilled.
Oh my gosh. Well, one of the things I love about this book is its pacing. It's set, as you said, in 12 hours, one day in New York City, which is already a fast-paced city. What were some of the things you loved about that shortened time frame, and what were some of the challenges in writing that?
Right. So, you know, when I had this idea, I thought it was great, right? 12 hours, and some of my favorite things are like Before Sunrise, that movie. I love that.
Yes.
And as a writer, it helps me like to have a fast-moving plot. You know, like it helps me keep going forward. But it is a pain in the butt because you have to like look at the train schedules and like the bus schedules and how long does it take, like at average walking speed, how long does it take to get from point A to point B? Like I was really like in the weeds with that stuff at some point. But Google Maps is your friend.
Right. They were all over there in Midtown. They're up yes. in Harlem. They're yes. back downtown.
And they're very fast walkers because I had to cram everything in. Like there were, I had to cut out a lot because it was just like not possible for them to do this in 12 hours. And Google Maps seriously saved me.
Wow.
And because it has train schedules, it had everything. It was perfect.
Oh, see. So besides Google Maps, do you have any advice for other aspiring writers who may be toiling away, you know, at a different major in college or something, but do you have any advice for people who are looking to break into writing?
Yeah, I mean, I have like practical advice. Don't give up, you know, writing is a muscle and you have to keep practicing. But I think my biggest advice is sort of more philosophical, which is, you know, let your freak flag fly, right?
Yes.
Like, don't let anyone put you into a box, you know, like the things you like, read broadly, and just, you know, really embrace that part of you that makes you different or weird or strange or whatever. Because that's the part of you that people are interested in hearing your point of view. So yeah, don't let anyone put you into a box because this world really, really, really wants to, but don't try to resist.
Yeah. Nicola, would you be willing to read us a passage from The Sun is Also a Star?
Okay, prologue. Carl Sagan said that if you want to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. When he says from scratch, he means from nothing. He means from a time before the world even existed. If you want to make an apple pie from nothing at all, you have to start with the Big Bang and expanding universes, neutrons, ions, atoms, black holes, suns, moons, ocean tides, the Milky Way, Earth, evolution, dinosaurs, extinction-level events, platypuses, Homo erectus, Cro-Magnon man, etc. You have to start at the beginning. You must invent fire. You need water and fertile soil and seeds. You need cows and people to milk them and more people to turn that milk into butter. You need wheat and sugarcane and apple trees. You need chemistry and biology. For a really good apple pie, you need the arts. For an apple pie that can last for generations, you need the printing press and the Industrial Revolution, and maybe even a poem. To make a thing as simple as an apple pie, you have to create the whole wide world.
Oh, excellent, Nicola. Well, thank you so much for being on Book Club Appetizer. It has been great talking to you.
Thank you, Abby. Thanks so much. This was awesome.
Thanks for listening, readers. We have some reader questions on our site, in addition to a link to an awesome Spotify playlist that we put together to accompany Nicola's book. All of the songs are about being young and falling in love.
Oh. And if you liked The Sun is Also a Star and want to read more books like it, the Read It Forward team has suggested a few recommendations on readitforward.com/podcast. We're producing monthly episodes centered on fantastic books we think you should read with your book club or alone. So when you need something new to read, come see what we've been devouring recently.
And whether you've listened to all of our podcast episodes or you're a first-time listener, we'd love to know what you think of our show. Take a minute and leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it.
And as always, don't forget to follow us on Twitter @ReadItForward and tweet about books with us. Happy reading, and cheers!